I will say this, probably 90% of my sins have been my own fault.
No, I didn't mean sin.
Things that I've gone through.
Whatever God's motivation was in this whole thing, it was right. If you know that His ways are always right, then they're better than yours. Through the good, the bad, whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if any time growth is easy, and I don't know if any time that change is easy. But if He's going to change us to be like Christ, there's going to be some heartache. There's going to be troubles. There's going to be trials. It's through those trials and those tests that we can come back and say, here's what God did.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's freedom in that. There's freedom
there's
in
huge freedom.
Faith
yeah.
Being able to say, God, no, I trust you.
Yeah.
And I'm ready for whatever you bring about. So I think it kind of brings down the urgency. And I don't believe God intends for us to live in the urgent.
No.
Other than to be urgent about His gospel and about the kingdom.
We know what you meant, but I'm still going to steal that soundbite.
I got to do some housekeeping. Welcome to the other 167, led by Kenny for your thoughts, Lewis.
Go ahead. Finish your intro. I got to say something else.
Kenny Lewis, Pastor Ben Pierce, Garrett Leal. I realized this morning it's been a while since we've really explained what the whole point of the show is, and I was asked Sunday morning about tell us what the show's about,
the point?
And I never know the answer to that. I don't know what the point is. We talk about God and church and the Bible.
Like my sermons. just like my sermons.
Well, we're just talking about the Bible.
That's right.
Yeah. We're talking about how you go about living this life. 167. Yeah. The other 167 hours in the week.
How do you live it out? It starts for we get the question a lot, what's 167 stand for? It's that there's an hour a week that we're in church that we tend to do
pretty well for the
most part, but then we have to live it out the other 167 hours of the week. So we talk about things we get right, get wrong, can do better. There's not much of a format other than that, so I don't know how to describe it. But welcome, welcome back, welcome for the first time, whichever the case may be. It's my favorite hour of the week, or two hours, depending on how many hours we talk. Oh, and housekeeping, you might see in some of the upcoming episodes that our outfits might change in our episode. It's not going to be because we're changing. We don't have hats, but we're just basically with these guys are vacationing.
It's summer. It's summer. He's on a mission trip going with the youth to Caswell. Yeah.
For my birthday, too.
There you go. When's your birthday?
It's the 21st.
I got it on the 17th. We moved.
Oh, we already talked about it.
It's only time to work for us this year.
I probably was the last one to be asked, but I look forward to it. Just to have to be able to affect people, hopefully, for the rest of their life.
You're going
to
love it. It's a great trip. I love it myself.
And did I tell you, I don't know who I told. I told somebody, I can't remember, about Vacation Bible School. Maybe it was you. Molly's son came in Friday night. Did I tell you?
Finley?
Yep. Yeah. Did I tell you?
Hmm. Shout out. She's listening.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Well, I must have told her.
I think she quit after you joined.
Yeah. I must have told her.
I think he quit after he joined, too.
But anyway, I sat beside Finley because he was in our group.
Yeah, he's a great kid.
And I said, well, you're here. Or I can't remember. I just asked, basically I was saying, I was glad to see you here. And we haven't seen you. He said, well, I had to come see my best friend. And at first, I'm thinking.
Did you think it was you?
No, I'm thinking of those boys down there. I said, well, who's your best friend? He says, Jesus.
Oh,
so, when you hear stuff like that, man, you feel like that you've accomplished something in that his life that will keep him for the rest of it. He'll remember for the rest of his life.
That's the key. Caswell's a great time, man. Yeah. Those kids.
Well, he's not
a lot of fun.
He's a little too young.
No, he's got another year or two.
He's got two.
Where he go, it's the same premise, though. Those kids eat it up, and it's a time of worship, time of growing closer to the Lord.
Okay.
I had a cousin that volunteered there when he was in high school, and I don't I don't know if he listens or not. If so, shout out to you,
man. Yeah, man.
But he volunteered there for the summer, and we went down and visited a couple of times when he was down and hung out with him a little bit. It was a fun place.
Yeah, Caswell's a nice place. It's a good retreat for Christians. I know they've got a hotel room that I've stayed at a time or two.
A hotel room?
They got hotels?
I thought it was just like a camp.
No, it's got a camp, but then you go on to the end of it. Going through the camp, and they got a hotel room that you can.
Maybe that's why people.
And I think it's
go.
Like for a lot of pastors and all, and like you can do retreats there. But well, yeah,
I got to sleep in a sleeping bag.
Yeah. Kenny's gonna be calling.
I did too when I went with the.
Oh, okay, man.
This was when I went down there to spend some extra time with the kids.
This before you got important, right?
So I mean, I think I was pretty important then. Now it's less important. I got demoted. But no, I was going to say a shout out to our sponsor, Kenny's Jams and Jellies.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
Which I want to share this. It's so good. My wife ate the jams and jellies that he made, and it was so good that she had to go out to the store and she bought some more. And I was like, she bought them. She spent money, and I was like,
I didn't see
any of them by the gross over there.
Tell her to just come pay me.
Yeah.
She bought them, and she said, tell Kenny, I loved it so much, I went to the store and got my own. I said, but that's not Kenny's Jams and Jellies.
That's not the same
and that
thing.
That doesn't help our sponsorship.
Did she buy the grape?
Yeah, she did.
Did you?
I did.
Hey, would you tell me? Or are you
No, I'm going to tell you the truth, because you're buying new grapes from me next year. I think they're the best thing I ever had.
Your mother said I need to add a little more sugar. Now, I tend to agree, because that's what I thought.
Oh, look at there.
I'll be honest.
She'll give you honest feedback.
She'll be honest with
me. I thought it was sweet enough, man.
When I tried it, I didn't know I was supposed to be taste testing. It tasted good to me.
It's good to me,
He said it needed to add sugar. I said, well, I don't know. It tasted good.
He does a good job with it.
Yes, sir.
And look, my grapes are shaping up, man. I think he's going to be a good year. You're going to have more jelly than you know what to do with.
And you might know, so funny little story. We've had our first non-Renee commenter on a video that I saw this week. So I don't know if this is somebody that. So
Renee commenting?
She comments, right? So she pays attention.
I thought she just hit like or something like that.
No, she comments too, because I think she pays attention to a few episodes that we've talked about how it's important to like and subscribe and comment and be interactive, because that helps the YouTube algorithm think that people like us and it puts us in front of more people. And, she pays attention, apparently, because she comments almost every video. Not every single one, but she usually is. And it's funny, too. I can tell because she'll comment. I'll publish it. She must have notifications on because it won't be out 30 seconds.
Right.
And I've already got a comment. And I'm like, you ain't even watched it yet. But that's okay.
That's the loyal thing.
That's right. But I had a cool so someone commented. I don't know if this is someone I don't recognize the username or whatever, so I don't know if they're somebody from the church or somebody from Afghanistan for all I know.
Right.
No idea. But it was pretty cool because what they commented kind of prompted me to go back and listen to that show and listen to it again. And on that show, we had said, I kind of jokingly said our 50th subscriber would give them a free jar of Kenny's Jams and Jellies. So we're at 39. We've got, at that rate, you've got some time.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Whenever we hit 50, I'm going to need you to whip up a jar for somebody.
Well, I'm like, just let me know when you get a 49 and I'll do it.
Go ahead and start.
I'll do it.
Keep it in house. Yeah, I like that.
So shout out to our commenter, and I really appreciated the comment. It was pretty cool to see what they commented was the title of that episode had that phrase in their mind for some reason.
Right.
I didn't know why, and then they stumbled on the episode and watched it, and that was pretty cool. And it's neat to see the spirit at work. And then, as it turns out, I went back and listened to that episode, and there was a lot of things that I needed to hear from that episode. So that was pretty cool.
It's cool how God works that way.
Cool to see him in action.
How was your teaching class?
It was great.
Yeah.
I had a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they told me when I got
heard
there.
It was good.
Did they hit the like button on you?
On me?
There was a lot of onliners.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
There were a lot of onliners.
Did they hit any like buttons?
I don't think you can like on Zoom, but they invited me back again. So that's a form of like, I suppose.
Yeah. They said, man, those people sharing and talking that usually don't open their mouth. So good job on that. Anytime you get people sharing kind of wrestling with the text. That's good stuff.
It was a lot of fun, and I told him when I, so first thing Martha said when I got in there, somebody said, "You always get the hard lessons."
Yeah, I was going to say, well, I think they do that on purpose.
I do too.
The teacher's
yeah.
like, I don't want that one.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. And I said, well, I'm glad that y'all think this is a hard one because it's real tough for me. So I'm glad that I'm not the only one that thought this was a hard one to break down. But we had a great time with it, and it was interesting the way it went, because when I first read, for those who may not know, it's Ananias and Sapphira.
So Ananias and Sapphira, and they sold a piece of land.
Not Elvira.
Elvira. Sold a piece of land and said it was, they brought this much money and brought it in, and they lied, and boy howdy, it cost them.
That was convicting to me, and I'll tell you why. As I started looking at it, I realized that, you know, that could have been any sin. The wages of sin is death. I mean, Romans says that. And God's justified to kill us right on the spot.
He doesn't know his mercy.
I'm just so lucky that he hadn't.
Yeah.
Because I can see many a times where, and I hate to say lie to the Holy Ghost, but when you're lying to somebody, you're really lying to God. Yeah. Basically, and you know, I could see that. Although they probably didn't think they were lying to God Himself, but I don't know if that's in the Bible or not. But I believe, you know, if you're lying, you're sinning against God.
Well, I think you can almost take that from the Book of James, which talks about when you bad mouth a fellow human being, you're bad mouthing God because He's created in the image of God. So you could easily draw that conclusion to say, well, a lie is a lie against God. But, you know, part of me is, because I got asked the same question. Evidently, that Sunday school lesson kind of evoked a lot of different questions. And I still go back to, I still think a lot of what it was for Ananias and Sapphira was that sense of pride of, well, look at Barnabas getting his flowers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want my flowers too. Yeah. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to sell a piece of land. That's great. But I'm going to hold back some of the money and say I sold it for this. And, hey, y'all give me my flowers and, clap and applaud.
They wanted to be better than what they were.
Look at me.
Yeah.
And I still think that is a big piece of what drew God's wrath, if you will, along with lying to the Holy Spirit. But to me, a lot of it is that I got to make more of myself.
But my point was, you know, God hates all sin. So, you know, if it wasn't for His mercy, He has a right to strike us down anytime He wants.
Not giving us what we deserve.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, and that goes from telling a white lie. But we don't think that's that bad. There's not a lot of consequences for it. But it's in God's eyes, they're all the same. So,
It's fascinating, and you know, I love hearing the two of you talk about the different approaches to it. Mine was totally different than those two, and it's cool to see how the text and how the word works, and that you can draw so many different things from it. And it was so ironic the way this played out. So when she first told me the lesson, I kind of followed what I did last time. I read it. Now, I was familiar with this story. I wasn't familiar with Genesis 37 the first time I taught it, so that was a new one for me. But this one, I knew this story, and my immediate reaction was, okay, well, I know the moral of the story. I mean, Christian would understand the moral of this story at 4 years old. Don't lie to God, and they did, and they died. I gotcha. And we all know I'm a talker. I could carry on a conversation for an hour about the color of the sky, but an hour, okay, you lied to God, and now you died. What am I going to come up with? Okay, well, it took him, he gave me 4 or 5 weeks to marinate on it, and he waited until the last minute. But come about Thursday, he hit me as I started to dig into it a little bit more. There was a whole lot more to it than that. And by 2 o'clock Saturday night, Sunday morning, I'm sitting there thinking, how am I going to compress these 3-4 notebook pages down to an hour or 45 minutes or whatever I got? Because there were so many different angles and ways you could attack it. The lying is, you know, it's a big sin. Mm-hmm. And to what you said there, I mean, another supporting text, I think, for that is that whatever you did to, when Jesus says, whatever you did to the least of these, you did to me. Well, if you lie to somebody else, it's like lying to him. So I can make the argument for that.
Right.
But then also the pride was one that stood out. It wasn't the withholding from God that really got them. You could make the case that it was about they didn't give everything. Well, he never even told them to give it. it was their pride that motivated them to even do it in the first place and then lied about it.
That haughty spirit of, I'm going to make more of myself than I need to.
Yeah, and I told them, I said, I don't know if, you know, it seems like a pretty harsh penalty for sure, but if I was going to try to think of something that would make God get mad enough, quick enough to just strike you dead on the spot, lying out of pride, that's probably on the short list.
Those seven things that God hates, those seven deadly sins,
yeah.
There's about two or three of them right there they just did. Whether it's lying, a haughty spirit, you know, there's several things that would have made it easy. At the same time, I sure am glad God's got mercy and has had mercy on me because, you know, I should have been gone a long time ago.
Me too. I'm living out my nine lives. But
you
I
ain't getting.
And when I first read that, I remember when I first read that. That's been so long ago. I interpreted them: were they really saved? That was my first interpretation, because why would God even do that, you know, to a young child?
Well, and it does. Now, I don't think you're alone in that.
Well,
I think
I'm talking
that
about 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago when I first read that.
Yeah.
Today, well, they probably were. I'm sure they were saved, but it's really, God didn't tell me one way or the other, so it must not be important. But if they were saved, that might have been their best day.
Yeah. Well, and
they went to heaven. I mean, if you can think, you can go a lot of different ways. It's terrible here, but if they were saved, they're in heaven now. So I mean, they gained too, I guess.
And there's a lot of that. I think that was part of the direction I kind of ended up going on Sunday in the class, was that we can play these what if game. Well, were they saved? Were they not saved? Well, we don't know.
Yeah.
How much did they withhold? Did they withhold just enough for breakfast tomorrow morning?
Yeah,
or did they withhold the whole thing? We don't know.
Told.
You can play that game a lot, and that ended up being like my big finale, right? That was the
right,
closing thing about, is that at the end of the day, one of the lessons that I kind of draw from it is we just have to know that whatever God's motivation was in this whole thing, it was right. It was the right thing to, because it could have been the way I worded it with them was even in that act and that sin, he still used them to grow his kingdom. We're still talking about 2,000 years later. We're still talking about the story. Now, that didn't end well for them that day, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But he did use, it's Romans 8:28 again, God uses all, you know, works all things together for good. Even that act, he worked
and
together for good.
And it worked out for them too.
Right. We don't know for them. We don't know that part, right? But whatever he's doing, it was for the good of his kingdom. That action, he used it for the good of his kingdom, even though it might not have been good for them, or it may have been good for them, depending on the way you want to look at it.
Well, I mean, that's what Acts 5:11, and great fear came over the church.
There you go.
Over the whole church. It wasn't just part of the church. Whole church, and over all who heard of these things. So it's not just the church. This impacted, and it says, of all who heard. That's outside the church, because I'm sure stuff like that gets talked about.
Yep.
I don't know if it's been in the Jerusalem Gazette or anything like that, but I guarantee you people were talking, did you hear about this? And you got to figure, people were like, whoa, God did what? And being Jews, man, this would be right up what they would, you know, would call their attention to what God's doing.
Yeah.
And it still affects people. We're talking about it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love one of my mentors when I was growing up used to have a saying that God desires truth in the innermost parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I still go back to that oftentimes, is he desires truth in our innermost parts. And what that means is that we're 100% truthful all the time, not playing fast and loose with words, not everything else, but truth in the innermost parts. And I think that is, every time I hear like Acts 5, Ananias, Sapphira, I think of that same saying is, no, that's what God desires, is our wholehearted commitment that desires purity, not just talking about it, but desires to live out what it means to be pure.
And also, I mean, it's also God wanted to purify the church too, because who knows what might have happened if that got out that...
Yeah.
They were.
Ananias and Sapphira could have been elected deacons.
You're right. So we don't know.
Because Barnabas was. I apologize. Barnabas was not a deacon. Philip and Stephen were the two that are probably the most famous.
Was it Philip, the disciple Philip, or is it a different
Philip?
No,
this is a different Philip. This is a Philip that, this Philip actually is, Acts 8 is the one that's talking to the Ethiopian eunuch, and gets used greatly. Stephen as well. Both of those two excelled as their deacons, and God used them not only just to serve and bring food to the widows. He really used them to further the kingdom through evangelism and through, Stephen was there when Paul was there when Stephen was stoned. So.
Do you think that's why Stephen's mentioned was such a, that's coming from Paul?
Well, I mean, Luke wrote it, Paul could have helped him to know what was going on. I think Stephen was mentioned because... Hey, man, if you read Stephen's sermon...
No, I want to not talk about Stephen being mentioned. Why is it mentioned Paul there? Because it goes later on.
You know, he's putting together the story of the church.
Was it... did Paul... Was that the start of Paul's conversion?
Could have been.
I mean, he was on the head.
He was on a holy tear, after that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Was that in the back of his mind that this guy died for something that... He wasn't even sure if it was right or not.
I would think there were some things he saw that had to make him think about it. Yeah. But, I mean, when he came face to face with Christ,
I get it. Yeah.
So
I wasn't really getting that before.
Could it have been that he is,
I've got it now. And I think it stayed with him, too, because his eyes.
He was ready to go. And he was ready to go and die and everything else. But his eyes and his body won't ever be the same.
Right. And I don't know if that was a thorn in his flesh, but I do know he mentions it in Galatians. Look how big I write, man.
No, so. I think that's part of what the thorn in the flesh was, but I think it was some other things, too.
He was scarred for life on that, then.
Oh, yeah.
He was scarred from that and numerous others.
He was
shipwrecked, beaten 39 times with lashes. My man was beat to death.
Yeah.
He was willing to do it.
One less. I think it's 40.
40 minus one, 39 lashes. Yeah,
40 will kill you. Is that what it
is? And he was stoned a couple of times. So, I mean, good gracious, man. You talk about somebody who, he didn't mind being a martyr.
Sounds like he thought he was the martyr several times.
After a while, but no, that's not him. And that's not what he's willing to go again.
I just wish I would know what heaven, what he saw in his vision to heaven. But that must have just something personal to him, and that probably helped him keep on going. Well, this is what awaits me. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know.
And he didn't even brag about it. That's the thing that's cool, is that it humbled him more than anything else.
I used to think in Romans, when he mentions wretched man on him, that he was kind of being...
facetious.
Yeah. But the more...
He's just joking.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what... Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. But as I think, and I don't want to say got closer to God, because we can't get any closer than what we have now. We can know him better. But as I've gotten to know the Lord better in my life, or right and wrong, I feel more, and I want to say, without saying it, I'm going to say it, but sometimes when you say this, people think you're prideful, but I am more unworthy.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Then I realized that the big sins, I knew about those, but it's all that is my mind is corrupted.
Yeah.
My thought process is not where it should be. That God is so far off the charts that even the little things is just important or is just as bad and will send you to hell as just the big things.
Yeah.
Now, I will give this, that a lot of the bigger things might lead you into more things, worse things, but all sin is sin.
Well, I think something that has been working on me just a little bit here lately, and I give Ben a pretty solid assist to God on this, to point this out, is that a lot of the things that God is working on us in, and a lot of things I think in his word and just the way the Spirit works, it's not necessarily just about salvation versus how he wants you to live your life. We talked about that a little bit last week, and that, you know, a lot of the sins he's trying to clean up for a believing Christian, it's not to keep you out of hell. That's, we've covered that part already, right?
Right.
But it's so that you're more fulfilled in your time here and able to do more work for him and for his kingdom while you're here. And that's... I don't want to rank the two. I mean, but it's at least as important as the salvation, maybe, or it's, yeah. it's I don't know if you can separate the two. Well, I don't know, but it's...
All of it's part of God's plan.
Right, yeah.
And so I don't think you necessarily separate the two in a way, but his plan involves salvation, but it also involves sanctification.
Yeah.
And I think the whole process, it really is salvation.
Yeah.
If you stop and think about it, because I am being saved right now is what Paul says.
Right.
And then he talks about one day I will be saved. Well, wait a minute. I'm already saved.
Yeah.
I was saved October of 79, but I'm being saved right now. And that's that process of it working out in my life. And I love what you were talking about, Kenny. I had to think about, you know, when you dig a hole, the depending on where you're at in the world, sometimes it's the outer shell of the earth that's the hardest it can be. I used to live in a place that was orange clay and you couldn't hardly dig a hole. I had to plant a tree one time and I didn't think I'd ever, I should have just went and rented an auger. That's how tough it was to dig. Tree died. I didn't dig it deep and I'm like, you own your own tree. But then I go to my house and where I live, it's called the Duncan Desert. It's nothing but sand. I can literally dig a grave without putting my foot to the spade almost. But once you get below that 6-7 foot, then you start getting harder and harder ground. And I used to have a boss that used to say, okay, now we're getting to the stony ground.
Yeah.
The big stuff. You know, the stuff that we did before Christ, that's the easy stuff to dig. But then when you start getting to the heart, when you start getting to the heart, because I was asked this question, and I think it might be something we discuss in here. I was asked this question yesterday, is one sin more worse than the other? And they said, well, wait a minute, isn't adultery and murder worse than others? And my response was, not necessarily, because I know what lies behind both of those. And what lies behind both of those is a wicked heart. And that's the stony ground.
There you go.
You know, yes, adultery is awful because adultery is like throwing a bomb right in the middle of a group of people and everybody gets hit, especially if it's a tight group of people. You know, murder is awful, of course. But at the same time, Jesus went beyond just saying murder's bad. He said, no, if you hate someone, you're guilty of that. Yeah. So let's get to the stony heart of whether it's not being satisfied with your wife or not being satisfied in Christ. Let's get to the part of, hey, having ill will towards somebody. That's the stony ground. And I think that's where Paul says, wretched man that I am, because he's past the big sins. He knows it's that stony ground stuff we got to start digging in.
Yeah.
That's what Jesus said. Don't you get it? It's your mind that's messed up.
It's your mind and your heart.
You know, that's what he was trying to tell the Pharisees. It's what you're thinking that's all messed up.
And I will say this, disobeying God is a great sin, but it's not like Adam murdered somebody.
Yeah.
It's not like Adam had an affair with somebody. It's not like Adam was doing crazy things. He disobeyed God.
Just direct disobedience.
He ate I'm going to say apple because that's what I'm used to. Yeah. He just ate a piece of apple. He didn't break any of the Ten Commandments, I think. I mean, pride is the root of everything.
Yeah. Lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, and pride of life is all right there.
But his action don't seem to be too bad to me, but to God, eating a piece of fruit when I told you not to is just as bad as going out and killing your brother.
Which
is the next big sin.
Through sin entered, now death comes in.
That's why I say I don't think God categorizes sin.
That's what my ultimate answer was. In God's register book, if you want to look at it as a register book, no, sin is sin. At the same time, in our the way we keep score, one may be worse than the other because of the damage and the collateral damage it does. But in God's regard, it is, if you broke one, you've broken all. At the same time, aren't you glad that in God's keeping of the books, that when he renders Christ's righteousness to our account, it's forgiven. And that's what makes it so good.
Even if your mother tells you stealing a cookie out of the cookie jar.
Yeah. It's simple stuff. And again, even think about that. I think that's the thing of even those things like direct disobedience, all that, it goes back to it's a matter of the heart.
It's a pride thing.
It's a matter of the heart. That's always what it is. And there was a book written one time, and it's a great book, and it's The Problem of the Heart. No, the Heart of the Problem. The Problem of the Heart.
Yeah.
And that's really what...
Who's the author?
If you give me 10 minutes, I'll think about it. I don't think it's
Etheridge. That doesn't count, because if you give him 10 minutes, he'll look it up on his phone.
Yeah, I'm Google. It was a Bible study. We offered it here when I was director of discipleship. I offered it one time. I can't remember if it's, I think, Lockridge. It's got a ridge in it. I know that. I can see the cover right now.
Devil's Ridge.
No, Devil's Ridge. That's a golf course, man.
Is that still a golf course?
Yeah. Okay. It's private, though.
Is
it?
Yeah.
I'd like to play it. I played it one time. Nice. It was written by Brandt and Skinner. So, just like I said, Ridge.
I thought that was.
I thought that was the name. Brandt and Skinner. So, it's an old book. I may have a copy in yonder. It's a great book.
Oh, man. Yeah. How many times have you told me I've got a copy of that? I just need to look for it.
Well, I got books all over, brother.
I know. I'm just playing with
you. And I do. I got
so he's bragging about how well read he is, right? You got to look like you're
what an odd flex. What an odd flex there. You got a lot of books.
I got a lot of books. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. One of the things that I kind of brought it up on Sunday morning, and I don't even know if I brought it up Sunday morning as much as I observed it Sunday morning. I've really enjoyed noticing the Holy Spirit at work and the way he puts things together. And I noticed this Sunday morning, they were like, after I compressed it all down to my four topics, I'm like, this is what I'm going to try to hit. And it just seemed to, I might be sitting there thinking, okay, how am I going to segue from this conversation to the next? Somebody would say something that would just tee it up perfectly. And that happens a lot in here too sometimes. And then even the comment on the YouTube video this morning was interesting because it kind of teed something up for me that was like, oh yeah. And you see these things at work. And one of the big takeaways for me from the Ananias story was that, yeah, there's a lot of things that we can sit here and have all these conversations about, was this and that, and how does God rank this? And they're deep questions, and they're good questions to discuss.
It's a good challenge.
But at the end of the day, I think what I took from all of it was that to some extent, maybe even, was convicted a little bit on this, that my searching for all those big answers, at the end of the day, they all come back to the same answer, which is God's sovereignty and trusting in his sovereignty. And I don't have to give you every single answer, Garrett. You need to trust that what I said was right, even if you don't know what it was that I was saying. And that was a really cool thing to Romans 8:28 was something we talked about a lot on that episode that was commented on. And it's been on my mind a little bit this week also, in that you can take a passage and one word might stand out to you this time and another one later. I know at one point I was looking at that and saying that work was the word that kind of stood out. God causes everything to work together for good, not just snaps it in place. It's work. But listen, here lately, the word all things has been what's kind of stood out to me. And an interesting thing from it is, kind of like Ananias too, it's real easy for us to put words in the Bible that aren't there and to say, well, Ananias and Sapphira.
Think of the jewel and Ananias.
There you go.
Sapphire.
I hope I was saying it right on Sunday morning the whole time. I might have been saying it wrong then too. I don't know. But anyway, you can take that and try to interject all kinds of commentary that we might assume. They're really just your assumptions, right? I think one sometimes with Romans 8:28 that's kind of stood out to me is that it never says God works all good things together for good. No, it doesn't say he works all bad things together for good.
Sorry things. It's the whole mix.
It's all things. It's every single thing. And when you have that faith, I think I asked the question maybe even on that episode, like, when we mess something up and then he works it out for us, does that make it part, the mistake, part of his plan? That's a really deep and unnecessary question. The point is, everything that you're doing, he is working it together for the good, but it's not necessarily just for you. It's for the kingdom. He's working it together for the good of his kingdom. again, didn't work out well for the two of them in Acts.
And for their, I think you can take it for the good of their lives too.
Right.
In a way.
You definitely could.
But it is, the bigger picture is this kingdom.
Yeah.
But the ultimate thing is even our lives is a part of that kingdom.
Yeah.
And that's, again, God's plan is that we would become like Christ. And sometimes it mixes in a whole lot of hardships because I don't know if any time growth is easy. And I don't know if any time that change is easy. But if he's going to change us to be like Christ, there's going to be some heartache. There's going to be troubles. There's going to be trials. Because, again, it's through those trials and those tests that we can come back and say, here's what God did.
Yeah.
Here's how God got me through. Here's what he carried me when I couldn't even pick my feet up. And that's the times that you hear. And that's, again, that's that testimony of a mature Christian oftentimes is, it ain't that I got through it. Yeah. God got me through it.
Did y'all ever watch, I'm assuming you probably did, Bob Ross, the artist?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like kind of favorite. Yeah.
All right. Now, how many times did you ever watch him and he's got a...
He can create, man.
Yeah, happy little trees.
Yeah, that's right. How many times did you see him and he's painting a really beautiful picture and you can see it's coming together really nice and then he takes a blob of black paint and just throws it across it and you think, well, he just ruined it, right? And then you sit there and watch long enough and you see what he does, but it's like, oh, wait, that was a stream that he was creating.
Yeah,
I've thought about that a lot with how God works in our lives a lot of times when those smears of black paint show up, we kind of sit there and think, well, what was this for? What was this for? But then if you sit there and watch it play itself out, it's always a beautiful thing that he does with it, even if we didn't see it at the time. And I thought about the kids. The kids used to always, or they still do it some, for watching a movie, they'll drive me nuts trying to predict what's going to happen next and trying to ask questions about what's going to happen next. And I'm always telling them, if you'll shut up, it's in the next scene, or you're going to find out. Or just why are you asking me this 5 minutes into it when the answer to that question is actually the whole point of the movie that you'll find out at the very end? I don't want to ruin it for you. And I was thinking about it, I was like, that is exactly me and God in my life. I'm constantly trying to figure out where's he going with this and interrupting him. And I missed the movie. And I missed the...
Trust the ending.
Yeah.
It's going to be there. But right now, let's pay attention to what the movie is. I like that analogy.
And not only because it's so you can enjoy the movie. You know what I mean? Like, we don't like spoiler alerts in movies. Well, it's so you can enjoy the movie. Well, that's some of the uncertainty he gives us in our lives is so we can just sit back and enjoy watching him work and watching how a random YouTube comment or a random encounter with somebody on the street or whatever can change this and change that and watch those dominoes come, you know, fall and come into place. And it's like, just enjoy it. Just watch and enjoy watching him work.
And then if you stop and think about it, knowing the ending helps some of the other stuff.
Yeah.
If I know what the ending's going to be, okay, this is a bad part right here, but I know what the ending's going to be. I can make it through.
So we do know the ending.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the funny thing about it is that we know the ending.
Right.
And then we still agonize on how we're going to get there and how's it going to get to, how are we going to get to that
point. We want to play out every scene or worry ourselves to death about every scene when the director already has the movie made.
Yeah.
And we just need to watch it through. I kind of did that over July 4th. We didn't have any kids at home. And so Renee and I were just looking at TV and Sixth Sense came on. And I love that movie because of, at the end, it's such a shocker that, oh my goodness, he's the one that's... And I was sitting there thinking, okay, I've seen this, so I know.
Yeah.
But I was watching more for the cues of, oh, okay, now I'm seeing, you know, it's cold in the room, or I'm seeing she didn't see him, and you thought he did. And you're looking for, you know how it's going to end, so now you're ready for this stuff. I think there's a way it plays in our life as well, is when you know the ending, nothing should shock us. Yes, it hurts. Yes, it's coming. But we also know, hey, the main director, the writer of this film, the director, the producer, whatever he is here, he's already got the end worked out.
Yeah.
So we can even know that even in the mess, we're going to be in good shape. Sometimes those messes are things we make.
I will say this, probably 90% of my sins have been my own fault. I've made my own mistakes. No, I didn't mean to say
that. 90% of my sins have been my fault.
Things that I've gone through.
Yeah.
Okay.
90%
your trials. 90% of your trials,
temptations have been because of me.
And I don't know if I needed the devil's help.
No,
I'm
no,
doing pretty
no.
good.
Yeah, I said it a couple Wednesday nights.
I don't need his help. He needs to. He's probably somewhere. I probably never met him. I might have met some of his cronies, but I don't think the devil's too concerned about me. At least at that time.
He just let you. He just leave you alone. You take care of yourself.
You're doing fine. Yeah.
Well, I mean, hey, look. I said this a couple Wednesday nights ago. It's been a while because we hadn't had Wednesday nights during the summer. But I mean this, and I'll say it often. If I could kick the rear end of the person who causes me the most problems, I wouldn't be able to sit down for a week. Yeah. Because it's me. It's me. I'm the problem. It's me. Yeah. Shout out, T Swift. Listen. I had a interesting. Question come up the other day, and it came from our minister of worship here. Doug asked me yesterday, he said, you know, listening to that sermon Sunday, he said, my kids came home and we had a big discussion about it. And I thought it was a pretty good little question, and it's one of, I've been wrestling with it since he asked, and he says, do you have to be saved in order for God to hear your prayers? Does God hear the prayer of unsaved people? And my response was, well, according to that text, he heard the nine prayers of, ten prayers of people that were just lepers crying out. And I said, no, I tend to think God does answer prayer for those. And he makes the rain to fall on the just and the unjust. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen lost people cry out to God. They may not have known him and not been saved for healing, for their spouse, for this, that, and the other. So my response was, yeah, I believe he does answer. Because, hey, man, he did those nine. Ten prayed, but only one returned to give praise.
Well, I don't know if this is...
I don't know where it's at, because I really haven't dwelt on it that long. But it does say God does not hear. And I don't know the context on that, so... I do believe God hears sinners' prayer.
Well, it does say you're thinking that somewhere. Psalm 66:18.
Yeah,
if we regard iniquity in our hearts, then God does not hear.
And I haven't really.
I think that has to do with.
Yeah. I haven't really looked at that.
No, I think that has to do with even that's David writing it. Yeah. So I mean, we're talking about someone who knows the Lord, pre-Christ, of course. But for him, it's wickedness, just that. Walking with just bitterness and everything else, or just, you know, holding that wickedness in your heart, God's not going to have regard, or he does not hear.
Well, so, I think it might even be what's the heart behind the thing you're praying for.
Think,
if you're praying,
there you go.
So there's the verse, and I can't quote this one, but the prayers of a righteous man
availeth much.
So
it's James.
There you go. So you can take that, and then what you said in Psalms there. So I think that a righteous person can pray for something that's not a righteous thing to pray for, right?
And it's going to accomplish much.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you're righteous.
Well, I mean, if a righteous
according to God's will,
towards God's will, yes. Yeah.
But a righteous person is still human and will still have flaws. And that prayer, if a righteous person, if you pray for, you know, you use an example, you're as righteous as we got in here. If you pray to win the lottery, so that you can spend your retirement years on an island or something, whatever,
right.
Then that prayer is not a righteous prayer. It may come from a righteous man, but you weren't that righteous in the moment of that prayer.
Right.
Where a sinner may have an accidental moment of righteousness where they do pray for something that is a righteous thing to ask for. They may not even necessarily know why they're asking for it, but
you're going back to when it's the prayer of a righteous man, you're going back to the request more than the heart.
The heart behind the request at that time is the heart. It's kind of where Romans says that the Holy Spirit intercedes when we don't know how to pray, and the Holy Spirit should be guiding our prayers. I mean, sometimes I don't pray what I should ask for.
Right.
Sometimes I do. And I mean,
we ask amiss, because James says.
Yeah, quote me, James. What does it say about asking and God doesn't answer?
Well, you ask with the wrong motives.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's because you ask, and that has to do with bitterness and quarrels that are within you. And you said you ask and you receive not because you ask with the wrong motives. And so, I think it always, motives is going to be the test, if you will, of a righteous heart. So you're right on that. So, but I do believe that like those nine men, those nine lepers, ten really, Man, they're just crying out for mercy. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's what God hears, is a heart that's behind it that says, God, you're my only hope. And that's where I've made the argument is, I don't think Christ turns a deaf ear to that.
Let me ask you this, because weren't they supposed to go to the temple?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's why Jesus told them, go to the priest.
But that's
because
the law,
priest
right?
The priest had to sign off saying, clean bill of health.
That was in the law. So they were obeying. Were they not?
That's it. I mean, that's all week long I've been thinking about. Now, these guys were doing kind of sort of the right thing.
To do. Yeah.
Now, but that never says that once they went to the priest, then they came back.
Well, I mean, I agree with what you said on that. But I'm just saying, they were obeying. They were supposed to go to the high priest.
Yep.
And get a
sign off.
But they should have been thankful, maybe even going or coming back. They had to go right then and there. I don't know.
Well, I don't think he's ever going to have a problem with you taking a moment first.
That's what I'm saying.
That's where I was like, well, wait a minute. But, shouldn't they be obeying? And I wrestled with that because part
they were
of
obeying.
The legalist in me was, no, he told you to go do this. I ain't got time to turn around and say thank you.
Yeah.
I got to go do this. And
I mean, they were required to do that.
Sure.
But
and here's, let's play devil's advocate. I mean, you had a Samaritan. He ain't under Jewish law.
He didn't know it.
He didn't have to. Right. He didn't have to. So he had the unfair advantage of not having to go rush off to the temple, right?
He was just a mutt.
I mean, he's a half-breed, but at least he's the one who came back. And I love that, you know, Jesus even called him, this foreigner is the only one that came back. This foreigner. But
the
it
mutt.
Just goes to show, the mutt. It goes to show that his mercy is for everybody, including the mutts and the Gentiles.
I don't know how this ranks as an answer to your question, or how this plays as an answer to your question, because we could make it fuzzy and maybe it's oversimplified. But I think you have to say that God, at least my immediate reaction to that question is that you have to say that God hears the prayers of a person who's lost, because otherwise, how does a lost person ever find God?
And they would say it's first and foremost. That's the first prayer that he hears is salvation.
It's salvation. Okay.
And then after that, now he's really listening, and so. I go back to, I've seen too many unsaved people come to Christ, whether it's through a wife that was sick and they called mm-hmm. out, and I've seen it too many times that I'm like, well, yeah, there were other people praying, Sunday school classes or pastors or whatever, but there's just times that I just have to sit back and say, I just believe God would hear that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And look, I mean, again, I go back, I quote it a lot. He makes the rain to fall on the just and the unjust. Mm-hmm. And every one of us has got to have rain.
Oh, yeah.
If not, look around. Stuff turns brown and stuff dies. And if it don't rain, and I know there's got to be some unrighteous people from time to time, they're crying out for some rain.
Well, let me ask you this. What if somebody's asked you to pray for their beach because that hurricane won't get it?
Or it'll go north of them wipe out somebody else.
Or I mean, I don't know if I can sign my name to that. You got two.
Would you take that hurricane out back out to sea? I don't mind, you know, praying that Lord at times, and again, but I always come back to, but Lord, not my will, but yours, because I would love for that hurricane to low pressure just to push it right back out to sea and not hit.
But I think you're praying for yourself. But if you're praying for, for people that will be homeless and that kind of thing.
Well, I could pray for that. I mean, the damage and destruction and floods, or you don't want to see it.
To give me my dream job, I don't know if I can pray for someone that wants their dream job. Now, I can pray that I don't mind praying for you to have something to eat, or, you know, food on the table, or electricity, or shelter. But to give you that, I mean, I think you got to earn that a little bit.
Right. Well, I think there's no, and again, it always goes back to, and that's where I always want to preface it with, because I have people ask me, and I can tell by the way they ask that there might be a little selfishness there. I'm going to pray for God's will to be done. And whether you get the job or you don't get the job, let's pray that this would be something that God would prepare. It's going to be something bigger and better for His glory. And if you do get the job, hey, I'm going to pray that you, wherever He takes you, if it's on this job or that job or wherever, that you have the most opportunity to reach people for Christ. What we need to always be praying, or our underlying our request is, whatever makes much of God's name, whatever makes much of getting the gospel out, let's pray in accordance to that. And pray that wherever we find ourselves that, hey, this is an opportunity for the gospel. So if it's a brand new job, new whatever, it's not just so I can make a living. No, so somebody can find eternal living.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the best way to put it.
I think it's, I said early on in the show, like first couple of episodes, that my go-to prayer is just, your will be done. And then as I've gotten a little further along, I've learned how to pray for that a little bit more specifically, I said. Yeah. And I can give an exact example of what you were just talking about this morning. I had an important meeting this morning, which is why I was 5 minutes late trying to get here. But I don't want to pray for it. I've never done this. I've never been too quick to pray for him to give me what I want in those situations, because I know that there's things that he always knows that are, the domino effect. Right. But it's not about do what's best for me. It's not, please, help this. My prayer this morning was just real simple. I don't know what you want out of this. I don't know how you want this to go, but I pray that you will go the way you want it to go. And however it goes, help me to represent. And this wasn't my exact prayer. I'm trying to figure out how to paraphrase what the prayer was. I don't remember exactly what the prayer was. But however it goes, the outcome of the meeting is not as important as how I represent you during the meeting and thereafter. Right. And in every, it's how I represent God through the good, the bad, the ugly, the whatever. That's the more of my prayer now is more of where my heart's at.
Yeah, that's right.
Through and the good, the bad, whatever.
Contentment in
Yeah, and it does. It just gives you. I mean, and honestly, it was an important meeting. I wasn't nervous about it. I don't know how it went, and I guess we'll find out later how it went. And who cares? I mean, I'm not. I don't want to say I don't care about it at all, but it's like it changes. To me, that meeting didn't feel nearly as important as I might have thought it was 6 months ago.
That's right.
It was just a, hey, this feels like I ought to at least, ask for your blessing on this going into it, for whatever that means, right. Whatever that blessing to you means.
Take it wherever you want to go.
Wherever you want to go with it.
Yeah. I think there's freedom in that. There's freedom in faith. Being able to say, God, no, I trust you.
Yeah.
And I'm ready for whatever you bring about. So if I think it kind of brings down the urgency. And I don't believe God intends for us to live into urgent.
No.
Other than to be urgent about his gospel and about the kingdom, I think that's where we need to be urgent. But we live in we live in the tyranny of the urgent, if you stop and think about, I got to do this, got to do that. And we're always being push.
Yeah.
And I don't think God wants us to be like that.
When you say that, I always think of Frosty the Snowman.
What is that?
Busy, I got to get busy. He has to write something. You got to watch Frosty.
Man, Kenny, you are going.
I've seen Frosty.
Yeah.
Numerous times. I don't know the reference.
The Glass House. He's got to write 500 times.
I think he might be watching some of them, like, later on Frosties, like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and
I'm going to watch that. I'm going to pull you off
while you wait for the air to get
there. I got to get busy.
I've got to get busy writing. Busy.
Santa Claus has magic Christmas snow and brings Frosty back.
This isn't original Frosty, is it?
Yes, it is. And I think it is. Santa Claus tells him he's not coming to him unless he goes home and writes.
You think about Jack Frost.
No, I'll get it. I just thought about it. I hadn't really thought about it, but it's been a long time. But I might have the movie. I want to check that out.
What's he go again?
Busy.
He runs up and down the hill.
Busy.
I can't wait for you to see your face doing that. That busy, yeah. Busy. I like that. That's good.
You may be right, but I sure don't remember that.
We'll play it next time.
Yeah. but now, then again, I mean, there were a lot of Frosty movies.
This one was made in 1960-something. I mean, it's an old one.
So you are claiming to go back
to the original.
Cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
Cartoon.
Yeah.
Okay.
So are we talking about cartoon? Did Santa Claus come to town and Rudolph?
Rudolph was claymation type.
That. Santa Claus comes to town
was claymation type.
But you're talking animated, so this was cartoon.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is a cartoon. Animation was Frosty the Snowman, and Santa Claus coming to town, and Charlie Brown's a comic,
yeah.
And Frosty's a comic.
It's about 112 degrees outside, and we're talking frosty the snow.
But now, what's the one? I think it's the New Year one that's Rudolph and a Happy New Year with Mr. Heatmeister and I'm Mr. Heatmeister. And then
Burger Meister Burger.
Yeah, that was that's Santa Claus.
Comes to town.
Yeah,
Burger Meister Burger.
Yeah.
But who's the Heatmeister? And then I'm Mr. Cold Winter. I'm Mr. I can't remember.
They really come out some. Those are the four ones.
Yeah.
That I remember. The other ones were. Oh, and How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
And.
I don't like it either.
I like the original with the cartoon.
Well, that's what I'm talking
funny
about.
With the movies.
But
I want to see the busy, though. I don't know.
Busy.
You have memorized that movie.
Oh, he's going to be the highlight of the highlight reel this week. Let me tell you. Between that and 90% of my sins are my fault.
We know what you meant.
But I'm still going to steal that soundbite.
That's why I said that low, huh?
That's great. If I don't get to steal the line like that and use it for our benefit, I don't know what we'll do.
But have you ever heard of John Crisp? Have y'all ever heard?
I have seen some of his stuff. Yeah.
He is really good.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of
Comedian, right? Yeah, really? Yeah.
Have you ever heard his story about Lazarus?
I don't think so.
Y'all got to Google it. There was not a written story afterwards when he came back to life. I can tell you. A recorded story.
Uh-huh.
So he must have been kind of upset being up ahead, and he just got there and has to go back.
Oh, yeah, don't you know.
Bastard's calling you back.
No.
No, I'm good.
I'm fine up here. He might have been mad at Jesus because there was not a recorded story afterward. I'm not saying that he was, but...
Yeah, Lazarus was disappeared.
You don't hear from him anymore.
He disappeared.
Yeah. Do you think he went to heaven and came back 4 days later, or do you think he just kind of chilled for 4 days of sleep?
My gut feeling is, Paul says, be absent from body, be present with the Lord. I dare say he was not just somewhere in soul sleep. Silently. Me personally, I think brother was in... I like to envision talking to Jeremiah and Isaiah and Moses and kind of hanging out with some of the Old Testament saints.
I gotta go back, man.
Yeah.
I gotta die twice. Once was enough. But I believe before Jesus was crucified, everybody went to a certain place.
Yeah.
They were in paradise.
And when Jesus says,
when he rose again,
with me in paradise,
yeah.
I mean, where did he, I believe he was with Christ, talking about the man on the cross.
Yeah.
So like David, like when King David died, or when it sounds like we don't really have an answer for that for sure. Is there one? I mean.
The parable that I'm not going to say it's a parable because I really don't know if it's a parable, if it's a true story, but the rich man and Lazarus. The rich man sees Abraham.
Yeah, the bosom of Abraham.
And like they're in this holding cell. But they're not in heaven. But when they go to heaven, after Christ dies, he takes them. I believe they're in heaven now.
Then there's, you can back all that up scripturally, but you can also have another way scripturally. So I don't know that there's a definite answer. A lot of folks, and like I said, I'm not against that because I'm one of, I don't know that it spells it out exactly, but the parable, and that's one of the things, that is a parable with Lazarus and the rich man. You have to be careful with parables,
but
you
build a theology off of his name.
Yeah, you don't build a parable off, or your theology off of a parable. Let's look at some of the other things. And when you look at what David writes about when he dies, and that he would go to his son, that his earlier son, his child that was born, stillborn, that was, born out of adultery type, with Bathsheba. I'll go to him. He won't come to me. I know there's going to be an afterlife. Most people, and I don't think it's anything wrong with this, believe that there was kind of a pre-heaven Abraham's bosom that Old Testament saints went to. And then when Ephesians and Peter talks about Jesus leading captives after he passed, leading them, but basically was going, getting those Old Testament saints and carrying them to heaven. I don't know that I can get 100% behind that, but I can see it in the scriptures and say, all right, I can buy that. I can almost, you can have enough to back that up, that could be a possibility. I'm not certain that we have the exact answers.
So
I don't know if we have the exact answer. Yeah, I'm just saying.
But that one works.
But I would say that I'm probably closer to it than you are. But
yeah. Well, Sam, I guess
I'm probably more right than you are. But
okay. No, I'm saying you. I can make the argument and show you the scriptures for yours, and I'm not against it. I just don't know that is something I'm gonna say. This is exactly how.
I don't either. I do know what happened. That's all. That's all I know. Okay. Right there. But it's like
he was on a roll today.
It's like anything, almost anything in the Bible. You don't get all the details.
That's right. To know all the answers.
And you don't need to know. And if you did know, you wouldn't even understand it to begin with.
Yeah. Well, and if God's eternal, and then okay,
we can learn
what's the difference? Because if it's eternal, a second in heaven is the entire time that the earth's even been here. They may all be instant from that side of the time spectrum, if you will, that, you know, we all got there at the same time. Up there is a split second difference between Adam and Revelation. You never know.
And I tend to think this, I may not know where they spent the intertestament period, if you will, but I do know, and this is talking about David and Moses, but I know where they're going to be.
Yeah.
And I know where I'm going to be. I always tend to go, you know, because I know we can argue and have theological debates and usually most of the time I get to a place where I'm like, all right, it's obvious we're not going to have the exact answer, so let's go to what's the end answer.
Yeah.
And that right there helps me to have peace is, hey, man, I'm looking forward to meeting a David, a Moses. But I'm more interested in getting to see the one who died for me.
Yeah.
And the Bible gives us what we need to know.
Yep.
That's salvation.
Here's how you can know God.
Some things are very clear, and that's one of the things that is clear is salvation.
Yeah. Here's how you can have eternal life.
Yeah. Yeah.
To know God and to know the Son that He sent.
Yeah. Well, and to go full circle with it, I don't know the answer to it either, but whatever it was what God wanted, and it was the right answer.
Yep, yep.
Whatever he did was fine. It was good.
Yep. But no, I'm not against Abraham's bosom in that theory.
Oh, I know you're not.
We might just have two shows, Kenny's show and then me and Drew. Part one, part two.
He's been on a roll.
All right, boys. Well, thanks as always. So we're on a 2-week break. So I don't know when y'all get this. I don't have a clue if this was part one, part two.
Where are you going?
I'll be in Tennessee next week. Monday, when you're in Caswell, I'll be headed west.
You'd be going the other way, won't you?
Yeah.
And then we'll be back here 2 weeks from now, though, right? So I think we're going every other week.
Yeah, 23rd, I'll be here.
Okay.
But then the 30th, no.
Yeah. That could be, it says been out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's what it means.
Been out. He's been out.
He's been out there too. Maybe that says maybe been out Nashville. I wasn't sure when
you can get rid of the maybe now.
Yes, yeah, we're on the man moving my daughter out there.
Bye, everybody. Thank y'all.
When's that?
Great, right? Inspirational story. All the loved ones are sad. They're happy again. It's a miracle for everyone involved except Lazarus. Read the story. He was dead for 4 days in heaven. Just up there decorating his mansion. Okay, this is awesome. I can't believe we're finally here. This is great. He had a bum knee. That was fixed. He's walking better, feeling good. You know what I'm saying? Shooting hoops, the disciples. What's up, fellas? Y'all chill? Not the disciples. They weren't there yet. Noah, Abraham. What's up? I can't believe it. Streets of gold, mansions is incredible. We're in paradise with God forever, worshiping, no more pain, no more suffering. We finally made it, just in the mansion. Excuse me, is Lazarus here? He comes around the corner. Yeah. Oh, man. Listen, we don't normally do this, but... Oh, man. Listen, we got to send you back. Back to the Middle East with no air conditioning. Sorry.
Send us back, man.
Yeah.
I better die twice. Once was enough.